There we go. Right. So welcome everybody. So Adrian speaking for us this evening is a specialist in oral surgeon who has worked in primary and secondary care and postgraduate education. He has an avid interest in law, in dentistry, and has undertaken a law degree. He owned a large NHS dental practice for 16 years, is passionate about skill mix utilisation, and he was the lead dental practice advisor for Dental Public Health Wales and is expert witness for the DDU. So I'm going to hand over to you, Adrian. I will be here in the background. If people have any questions, please put them into the chat. We are going to be a little bit longer this evening than we are normally, so we'll probably be presentation for around an hour and a quarter, around 20 minutes, and there will be time for questions. But please pose any questions as we're going along, and I will add those as we go as well. Okay, Adrian, over to you.
Brilliant. Thanks, Joanne. Thanks for the invitation again. And as you well know, I'm a real honour to be an honorary member of BADT. I tell everybody that I meet. So really, really pleased to be here and thank you again. It's a cold, dark night, and sorry I've got my jacket on, but hopefully we get through it as quick as we can because rules and regulations on a dark night. But hopefully it generates some thoughts for you. As Joanne says, I'm quite happy to take questions as we're going along. So if you want to put them in the chat, sometimes it's easier to deal with that question at that particular time. So yeah, really happy with that. So I'll start sharing my presentation. Okay. Is that showing, Joanne?
Yep, that's fine.
Perfect, good. So currently I'm clinical director of community dental services. You think, well, what do you know about rules and regs? As Joanne said to you, I was lead dental practice advisor for Public Health Wales. So I used to look after, I was a conduit between the BSA and also dental practice. So I've probably seen most things within general practice for rules and regulations. Just giving it one bit of a caveat before we start is that this is, and you can see top right, which will be disappearing at some point, is NHS England. There are different contracts for Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales. So this only lecture is accountable for England. So Wales or Northern Ireland, unfortunately, this will not apply to you because it sets out regarding the UDA contract. And as we well know, Scotland and Northern Ireland still do fee per item and they've got no UDAs, and Wales are going to a new contract in April 2026 if it can be agreed. Okay, so aims of tonight really is to give you some information about NHS rules and regulations and how to stay within inside those rules, because what you don't want is a letter from governance, or you don't want a letter from probity saying that you've stepped outside of the rules of regulations. This has become more and more as now with direct access and exemptions. Therapists and hygienists can actually work outside of the rules and regulations because you don't necessarily know what they are. So that's what it's here to do. I'm also going to give you a bit of an indication about claiming and also the rules that govern you as dental therapists in general practice. So I'm hoping by the end of it, you'll be know how the contracts are monitored. We'll be able to tell you about the NHS claim regulations. Hopefully you'll be able to be consistent and confident in submitting claims, knowing when you can submit a claim, when you can claim additional UDAs, when you can do free charge treatments. And hopefully by the end of it, you'll be able to realise that and be able to implement that into practice. Here's the learning outcomes. I don't think we need to go through them. You'll have them on your documentation for when you get your CPD certificate. It's a slide I use really often, this one. Because I'm telling you that you can do something, it doesn't mean that you should go out and do it. You are a professional. GDC standard number one is put patients first. And you have ethical responsibility to stay first within scope, but also within your competence level. So even if I say something today that you think, actually, I think I could do that, if you don't feel trained, confident, and competent to do so, then of course don't do that. Put patients first. So, what is the legislation that sets out dental practices? What is the rules out there for us? So the legislation, it comes under the National Health Service Dentist 1977 Act, the dental services is inherent within that National Health Service. But you've probably more heard of the Dentist Act 1984. And that Dentist Act sets out what you can and can't do, what is classified as dentistry, what is classified as treatments, who can do those treatments. And that Dentist Act really, if you think about it now, is 40 years old, and it really isn't fit for purpose. And you probably hear all the time that the Dentist Act needs to be reopened because of lots of bits that are not quite right in it. It hasn't moved with the times. But in 2005, there was a change in that Dentist Act. And for all those who were working, that was when the UDA system came in. So it changed from a fee per item. So there was a statutory instrument, which means the Dentist Act was changed. And the 2005 regulations put into practice the UDA contract. And this only applies to England, but there are equivalent contracts and statutory instruments that were added to the Dentist Act in Wales and Scotland. And what it does, it sets out the provision for dental services. So the 2005 regulations tells us what the dental services are. And for all those, there was a change again to the UDA contract in 2022 when there was some additional UDA bandings put in. So they had to be a piece of secondary legislation. So what does it say about in the Dentist Act about dental hygiene and dental therapy? Well, it changed the title. Before that time, dental therapists used to be known as dental auxiliaries, and it changed the title to dental care professionals. I personally don't like the name dental care professionals, and I don't like them being two registers. I think we should all be on one register. But it changed your name from dental auxiliary to dental care professionals. It also prevented the misuse of titles. As you well know, you can't call yourself a dental therapist unless you are a dental therapist. So, and the Dentist Act, that lamented that. And it also set out what the practice of dentistry was and who could undertake it. And it was a registered dentist or a registered dental care professional. So outside of those, the practice of dentistry is illegal. So there was also a consultation that ended in 2022 that understandably changed the way that a DCP or a dental therapist specifically could be registered. Previously, and before the 6th of May 2022, dentists overseas could register as dental therapists in the UK at the GDC. And there was a consultation that ended in 2022. What happened, as you well know, dentists abroad are not allowed to register as a DCP, including dental therapy, and they put a fee attached to it, so it prevents people from doing it. And that's now legislation, that's now in law, that, as you well know, that a dentist abroad cannot register as a dental therapist, as it should be. Okay, so what are the requirements under the 2005 regulations? What does it say? It says, well, under a GDS contract or PDS contract, personal dental service or general dental service contract, you must undertake mandatory services. That means any proper or necessary dental care and treatment. There is a bit of a caveat that says, though, and it actually is in the legislation that says that the patient is willing to undergo. You can't force a patient to have treatment. A patient has the right to make the wrong decision. Even if you think it's the wrong one, patients have the right to make it. So, mandatory services set out all the necessary dental care and treatment that the patient is willing to undergo. I've been asked quite recently, can a dental therapist own a dental practice or can they have an NHS contract? Well, a dental therapist can own a practice, but they can't unfortunately hold a dental contract on their own without being in partnership with a dentist because you have to be able to undertake all the treatments according to mandatory services. And that includes surgical treatments and the list of appliances like dentures and bridges. So a dental therapist could own a dental practice, but they couldn't unfortunately have a dental contract on their own. They'd have to be in partnership with a dentist. But you can see here the list of mandatory services is everything that relates in dentistry, from examination to bridges. teaching you to suck eggs a little bit, but it's really beneficial to go back right to basics. How is treatment reported? It's reported under a course of treatment. So a course of treatment is when you examine a patient, you assess the oral health, and you plan any treatment from that. And the provision of that planned treatment, including the treatment planned at that time or the other time of initial examination to that patient. So it means that you see a patient, you assess them, and you carry out that treatment. Any treatment that you think needs to be done is carried out in that course of treatment. And as you all know, in the 2005 regulations, from the contract in 2006, that was classified as a unit of dental activity. So what does a course of treatment do? It actually measures your activity. It measures how much treatment you're doing. It measures how many UDAs you're doing. It measures how many patients you're seeing. It measures how many courses of treatment you're doing. So the unit of dental activity rolls up a lot of information. And UDAs are essentially a value. It's like a cost price for a course of treatment. So the current legislation talks about performers and performers list, and course of treatment had to be opened by performers on a list. And it was classified that you'd have to done performance list by performance list validation experience or foundation training to be on a performers list. And that is very true. But to open a course of treatment, you do not have to have a performer number. And this is a lot of work, I think, of your previous chair, Fiona Sandham, did a lot of work about not having dental therapists having a performer number. It's actually hearsay that dental therapists were supposedly needed a performer number, and we know that isn't the case now. So, as you will know, dental therapy can open courses of treatment. But as I said, having the ability doesn't mean that you have got the competence, and this is part of that lecture. So, there were some additional amendments that happened during that, allowing you to open courses of treatment. IT systems were updated with the BSA in order for that to happen, but I still hear there's issues people being able to send courses of treatment in. It allowed you to report an FP17, and in some respects, I think it defined the autonomy for future dental therapy in the future, and ORCA exemptions. So dental therapists are now able to fully work within their scope of practice, which is brilliant. Okay, so this is the new scope of practice for dental therapy. It's only came out 2 weeks ago. And what does it say about dental therapy in the new scope of practice? So if you're working in practice and you're opening course of treatment, you must feel that you've been trained, that you are competent and indemnified and insured to do so. So if you can answer yes to all them questions, then you are absolutely fine to undertake opening courses of treatment. Competence, I'm a little bit concerned about the new scope of practice for what it says about competence, because competence is a very specific moment in time. I'm a specialist oral surgeon. Would I be competent at doing root canal treatment? I'm trained to do it, but would I be competent? And how is that measured? How do I measure my competency? I guess by education, training, and gaining experience and feedback. But it's a really good thing to think about. How do you maintain your competence? Just remember, in the new scope of practice, you can do whitening under the prescription of a dentist. You can't do whitening without a prescription from a dentist. And remember, if you delegate any authority to any other member of the team, you have to make sure that they are trained, competent, and indemnified to do so. So if you delegate fluoride treatments to a dental nurse, it's your responsibility to make sure that they're trained, competent, and confident. And that comes back to that competency question. Scope of practice 2026. Watch this space. There's potentially some new changes coming regarding the work of dental therapists under general anaesthetic. I've been doing quite a lot of work on this on a side, involving BADT, special care, and paediatrics. So able the, dental therapists to actually work under the auspices of general anaesthetic with the use of a dentist. So that's hopefully coming to your scope of practice soon. So direct access, dental therapists can work within their full scope of practice without a prescription, without having to see the dentist. But remember, it's not a formal prescription for local anaesthetic, as you remember, it was a previous PSG or PSD. And now, with your exemption trainings, you can now do direct access, which is absolutely fantastic. And that came into force of June 2024. So, to answer the question, can a dental hygienist or dental therapist prescribe local anaesthetic? And you all say yes. No, you can't prescribe. Remember, you can supply and administer under exemptions. Try not to use the word prescribing because it isn't prescribing. Remember, the use of a PSD or PSG is still available to you if you've not done your exemption training, but I would try and get that done. Remember, local anaesthetic is a prescription-only medicine. And remember, there are trainings that has been there's devolved nations and lectures online in order to get your exemption training. And if you do your training in any part of the UK, it's covered. You can work anywhere else. Okay, so that's the bit about therapy within the legislation. Let's talk about UDAs.
Adrian, sorry,
Yep.
I'm going to come in with a question
Of
for you,
course you can.
just off the back of there.
Yeah.
You were talking about GA.
Yeah.
What would be able to do under GA? Sorry, is it like XLA for peds?
Yeah, I mean, if you have a full scope of practice that you can currently do as a dental therapist, there seems to be there's a piece within the GDC that says that you can train and do general anaesthetic whilst training, but for some reason you can't do it once you've qualified, which seems absolutely crazy because a majority of therapists that come see me in my organisation is that, I'm not confident about doing deciduous or primary teeth extractions. And the ideal place for me to train someone as oral surgeon will be under GA in order to do that. So as I say, there's been a bit of work with special care dentistry, paediatric, BSPD, and also SARD and BADT to trying to come together with a support package to allow dental therapists to work under a general anaesthetic. So yeah, it will be a full scope of practice.
Thank you.
No problems. Okay, again, teaching you to suck eggs, UDAs for course of treatment. Currently, there are four specific bands for treatment. You must work within your scope of practice, not within the scope of the bandings for UDAs. So, for example, some UDA bands, as you know, band two, has root canal treatment in it. So, even though some band two treatments are in your scope of practice, you must pick and choose which you can do within the UDA banding. And what I've tried to do here with a band one course, and you see anywhere it's highlighted yellow in the lecture, is where I think a dental therapist is within your scope of practice. So you can see a band one course of treatment, everything's yellow here, and I think from a point of view, I don't think anyone would disagree that a dental therapist couldn't undertake all of this treatment. Currently, this band one gives you one UDA, and the current charge to the patient is £27.40. The average UDA value given to practices in England is currently £28. So you can see that the patient is paying the majority of the fee to dental practices for their NHS work. When the UDA ban started in 2006, the initial cost was £12, and the average was £24. So you can see that the patient was paying 50% of their cost, but currently and now they're paying nearly 99% of their cost. It only will take is a probably another uplift next year, and patients will be paying for their whole of their NHS treatment. So actually, NHS treatment will become privatised.
I'm trying.
Band two. It's classed as simple treatments in the legislation, which I think is terrible because we've all done some restorations that are not simple. And you can see the highlighted yellow bits again. I think the things will fit into your scope of practice. Currently, it gives you three UDAs, and the charge to the patient is £75.30. And a band three course of treatment, as you can see, nothing highlighted yellow here. This is outside of scope, but as you well know, it gives you 12 UDAs, and the current charge to the patient is £326.70. The last band is a band one urgent course, and I think this fits really well into dental therapy again. We in my organization, we have a really strict triage system of what patients can see a dental therapist for an urgent course of treatment. If a patient's complaining of pain that's keeping them awake at night, they've clearly got irreversible pulpitis, and that's probably not an indication to see a dental therapist because it's involving the pulp. Although we do, if there's no dentist that can be seen, we'll still book them in with a dental therapist who can remove the restoration and put some sedinol dressing over the top of it to try and settle the tooth down for it. But I think, dental therapy are ideal at seeing patients that have been triaged well, and then low-hanging fruit of the 6-month checkup. In my opinion, it's not appropriate for a dental therapist to be seeing new patients that have many diagnoses that unfortunately are sometimes out of your scope of practice. But we'll talk a little bit about that later on. A Band 1 core surgeon gives 1.2 UDAs, and it's the same charge to the patient. Even a slightly increased number of UDAs, you get £27.40 off the patient. That statutory amendment that I talked about in 2022 changed some of the band twos, and you can see some yellow highlighted again. So if you get three restorations or three extractions, and that's why I've highlighted primary, you can get 5 UDAs for that. There is no additional cost for the patient. It's still £75.30, but you can claim 5 UDAs. And there is a 7 UDA band for the provision of molar endodontics. But again, that's outside of scope. So just thinking about that, and you can put it into the chat bar. I don't expect people to jump out and talk, but this scenario one, following examination, a patient requires oral hygiene instruction, two restorations, and the provision of Durafat 5,000 part per million toothpaste. What is the banding? How many UDAs? And what is the cost to the patient?
Can you see the chat, Adrian?
I can't see the chat.
People are saying band two, band two, band two.
Amazing. Yeah, it is a band two, of course. 3 UDAs. Cost of the patient £75.30. Brilliant. Okay, scenario two. A patient requests a new denture. Okay, outside of scope of practice, but that's fine. You just need to know what the bandings are due to poor fitting. Following examination, they require one periodontal treatment visit, three radiographs, and four restorations. What banding is it? How many UDAs, and what's the cost to the patient?
Band three, 12 UDAs, 12 UDAs.
It's like they've read my lecture already, Joanne. It is a band three, yet 12 UDAs, and the cost of the patient £326.70. And then the last one. A patient attends a surgery with an emergency and requires re-cementation of a crown. You do not assess the periodontal health, but do take a radiograph to assess it if there's apical pathology. Again, UDAs, cost, and banding.
We've got a mixture here. We've got 1.2 and we've got band one. Band one. Sorry, the chat goes a bit wild. Band one, band two, urgent. 1.2 UDA, band one.
Okay, so it is an urgent band. So the patient's attended an emergency. So the definitions of an emergency appointment is you don't need to do a full clinical examination. You're just assessing the patient for that particular problem that they've come for. So in this case, the patient's attended the emergency, and it's a re-cementation of a crown. You've not assessed that, but you've not done a BP. You've not done anything more. You've just taken a radiograph to see if there's apical pathology. So this would be an urgent band course. It would be 1.2 UDA and £27.40. A question I get often is, can you book a re-cementation of a crown in with a dental therapist? Is it within their scope? As you well know, if you elevate a crown, during treatment, you're able to cement it back on temporarily. My thought process is here, and when I was a dental legal advisor, if a patient had been to see a therapist and you'd re-cemented using a glass iron or a temporary cement, as an emergency, a patient has been booked in you, it is classified as temporary cement. So from a point of view, it's probably a little bit of a grey area within the legislation. But I would definitely, from a point of view, say if an emergency is booked in with you and it's a re-cemented crown, utilising a temporary luting cement, and we know that glass aneurysm is temporary, you could potentially re-cement that crown. Okay, so
Sorry, just before we move on, otherwise I'll end up losing the
that's
questions.
fine.
What cement do you recommend? What brand names?
I'm an oral surgeon, but you're just wanting, it, when you're placing your, if you get powder and liquid, you just want to make it a thin luting cement rather than, so Ketac-Sem, Ketac-Fil, potentially something like that. But not the capsulated ones, because as you well know, it comes out already mixed for you. So probably very old school, but having some powder and liquid that you can cement as a thin luting agent.
Thank you.
No problems. Okay, so for all you who read the NHS England update, as you well know, the new contract, there's been some amendments for the England contract in 2026. And again, it's quite a complicated slide, but let's run through them. So they're going to start to supplement dentists and dental therapists for seeing patients. They're giving us some additional costs and some additional money. So if a patient comes to see you from April 2026, there is a £70 fee given to the practice for an urgent course of treatment. And if that patient hasn't been seen at that practice before, they pay you an additional £5. Five teeth with caries in dentine, they're going to give the practice £272. And then the dentist, if needs to do a Band 3 claim, can add that cost on to the treatment. There's not an additional cost to the patient, but there will be an additional cost to the practice, and additional money given. Five teeth into caries into dentine with unstable periodontal disease, practice will be given £680. And the dentist will be able to claim a Band 3 claim if requires. So I should have mentioned that the bracket 6 over 12 and 12 over 12 means that that treatment would normally last 6 months. That's what it's saying. That treatment, the one patient would not come back to you, the likelihood within 6 months. The Band 3 claim with the perio, the patient wouldn't likely to come back within 12 months. And if a patient gets a diagnosis of a grade C periodontal disease, there's going to be a fee of £238 given to the practice. On the right-hand side, you can see they've put into the contract and they've shifted the UDAs to allow dental nurses or anyone of the dental team to provide fluoride that's trained, indemnified, and competent to do so. So you can see patients on the left that are clinically high risk. You can claim some UDAs without an examination, because previously you need to do a Band 1 course of treatment. You have to undertake an examination. So there's going to have to be a piece of statutory instrument change to the legislation, because currently you can't claim a Band 1 unless you've done a clinical examination on a patient. But from April 2026, you can see that
New
there'll be
patient.
potentially no checkups at month 3, no checkups at month 9.
Do that.
And that can be done by a dental therapist or a dental nurse, and there'll be additional UDAs. There will also be a change in the
Oh.
Fisher sealant. Currently, Fisher
Why is
sealants,
it
and I'll
leaving?
come on to that slightly in a second, but Fisher sealants can either be Band 1 or Band 2. But from April 2026, all Fisher
Noted.
sealants will be Band 2. And if you do, understandably, 3 or 5, depending on the number of restorations you do, you can claim a 3 or 5 UDAs. And also in the contract, there is an annual appraisal and there's a 6 UDA value given to that. So the reason I mention these to you is it makes more complication for colleagues working in general practice on the NHS. How are you going to split your fees between dentist and therapist for this type of work? Understandably, dentists may have done the examination and then sending you to do the periodontal disease. How is that going to be split up? So I talk about this now because it's coming in April, so it's probably a conversation to start having with your principal, and maybe even something that us at BADT need to look at, giving some advice how you would split a contract between therapist and dentist. Lots of money to be earned. Okay, so let's move on to exemption from NHS charges. As you well know, we all see patients all the time that are exempt from charges, and we'll come on to the two different types. This is the first type. These are ones that you probably know about. The patient's got to be under 18, you know, they've had a baby in the last 12 months. Sometimes when their patients are an inpatient, as you well know, if you had to have some work done by a maxillofacial department and they were going to provide you with a splint or a gum shield, you wouldn't necessarily have to pay for that. And sometimes services that in an NHS hospital, sometimes we can go into them and get treatment free. So if it's lost their dentures, sometimes that'll be provided. The one I want to pull you to is the orange one in the centre, which is, you know, are the patients 18 and in full-time education? So it's a question I get, and I've seen it a lot of times. You know, students will come back from university and say, I'm in full-time education, I don't pay for my dental treatment. If they're 18 years old and in full-time education, they don't pay for dental treatment. But as soon as they reach 19 years old, they do pay for their dental treatment, even if they're at university. There is a way of getting around that, but it's really important. If you are a provider of a course of treatment and you are signing that off, you are saying that you have checked to ensure that individual is truly exempt from NHS charges, and there is a potential a recourse on you if you don't check these things. So it's really important to ensure that the individuals are 18 and in full-time education. If they're over 18, 364 days and or more, then they are have to pay for their dental treatment. Again, the list you've probably all seen before, and you hear these at reception. You know, are you claiming your working family tax credit? Are you, you know, got a income support? The two I really want to pull you to here is the two at the bottom, the purple and the cerise colour, is it? So we just talked previously about students who are 19 at university. So you're able to direct these individuals to the NHS website to claim for a HC2 certificate. So they fill out their details. They're likely to get a form to say that they are exempt from dental treatment. They also get free prescriptions, free wigs, free eye tests, but it's a form that they can complete. So it's a yearly form they need me to complete. So if somebody comes from university, unfortunately, if you've done treatment on them, they'll have to pay for that treatment. You can give them a receipt, but as soon as they get their HC2 certificate, they can send that receipt off and they can reclaim their money. The purple at the
Adrian,
bottom. Yep.
question for you.
Of
Sorry.
course.
Is it 18 when the course of treatment is opened or when
Yep.
it's closed?
Yep. So if you are pregnant and you're in that year of you've just had a baby, or you're pregnant before, or you full-time education and you're 18 when you start, it's when the course of treatment starts. It's not when the course of treatment finishes. So you a lot of the time you see mums who have had a baby in the last year, they usually come and see the dentist or the dental therapist in the last month to make sure they can get any treatment done within that for that last course of treatment. Yeah, good question. The HC3 certificate is just slightly different to the HC2. It means you have to pay partial costs towards. So if anyone comes to see you, and you don't have to be a student to be able to fill these forms, someone says, "Look, I really can't afford dental treatment," you can direct them for a HC2 or HC3 certificate, and they may be entitled to part treatment or full treatments for free. Okay, so we've talked about the legislation, we've talked about what dental therapy can do, we've talked about your costs of treatment, we've talked about the bandings and the costs. Charging patients, you know, do we need to charge NHS patients? Yes, you do have an obligation to charge and collect NHS patients' charges. If you carry out NHS treatment, and the patient is signed to say they've started NHS treatment, you are not allowed to remove the charge. You can't say to Mrs. Jones, "Well, I know her very much. I know she doesn't have very money, much money. I'm going to take that charge off her, and you know, I'll swallow that cost a little bit." You are not allowed to do that. That's seen as fraud by the NHS. And as you well know, NHS and government do not like fraud against themselves. So you have an obligation to collect that charge. And if you don't do that, as I said, it can be seen as obtuse and fraud by the NHS.
Yeah, I think we pride ourselves the same, but they don't.
Okay, multiple courses of treatment. It's expected that if you open a course of treatment, examine the patient, take radiographs as appropriate, and determine that they need restorations, but a perio treatment, it's expected that you would carry out all that treatment on the same course of treatment. You are not allowed to think, "Well, I'll do three fillings on this one and get 5 UDAs. And then I'll see the patient in a couple of weeks' time, open a new course of treatment, and open and get another 3 or 5 UDAs because I've done some more fillings. Opening multiple courses of treatment is seen by ICBs. They get that data quite commonly. They get it on a monthly basis to see how many courses of treatment individuals, not practices, but individuals are opening. And if they see short periods of time between courses of treatment, it is seen as a red flag. We'll come on to that a little bit at the end of the lecture, where what the things that they look for. But this is known as splitting a course of treatment. This isn't phasing a course of treatment. We'll talk about phasing a little bit later on, but this is called splitting a course, and this is not the right thing to do. This, as I say, will flag up at an ICB, and your likelihood is to have an inspection by a dental practice advisor coming to see why you're opening course of treatment on particular patients in very short time. It's really important, though, and I do put here that sometimes patients do return. I don't want you to be overly worried or scared and think litigation or think that a practice advisor will come in. If you need to open a course of treatment because a patient returns and it's not your fault, you've not missed anything or you've not split that course of treatment, it's absolutely fine to open a course of treatment in them cases. Please don't underestimate the work that you do and don't undervalue what you do. Don't think to yourself, well, if I open that course of treatment, I'm going to get an inspection. As long as you've got good contemporaneous notes that tells the reason why you're opening a new course of treatment, that's absolutely fine. But it's when you see course of treatment where you took radiographs on a previous course of treatment and you can see the caries, and then another course of treatment has been opened because you just want to try and split and generate more UDAs. As I said, having a high number of course of treatment can sometimes indicate poor radiographic investigation. The one of the things that I would normally check as a dental practice advisor is that there's multiple course of treatment is to ensure that radiographs have been taken under FGTP guidance, to ensure that you're taking radiographs, because the likelihood you're not taking radiographs, you're not assessing the patient properly, and therefore you may be missing things. So it's really important to work within guidance and within structure, and FGTP is there to tell you when you should be taking radiographs on patients. Okay, so there are certain situations, so I don't want to call it splitting, but let's call it phasing now. So this is certain situations when you can phase course of treatment, and it's completely justified to do so. And a couple of years ago, it's probably about 18 months now, the chief dental officer released a document that said it's absolutely fine to phase courses of treatment when it's justified to do so. So, for example, if a patient comes to see you and they've got, a new patient to the practice, they've got high caries lesions, you look in their mouth, you've done radiographs, and you see they've got 6, 7, 8 restorations that need to be done. At that particular point, you would give oral hygiene reconstruction, you would start your initial therapy, you would discuss with patients about the preventive action, and you'd try and temporize with caries removal with GI. That patient, unfortunately, is probably black. Plaque and bleeding indices are so high that it would be probably unethical to repair those teeth. So what you do is you give the OHI 2BI, you put some glass ionomer in, and you claim for a band 2. And depending on the number of restorations that we talked about, you could claim 3 or 5 UDAs. You send that patient away for 3 months. You say to them, "I've given you all the instructions now in order to try and prove you." The patient comes back and the patient oral hygiene improves, and then you can continue to restore the dentition as required, and you can claim for the appropriate band again. I have a patient where they come back and their oral hygiene still hasn't improved, and there's got to be a point where the ownership of the disease is on the patient. It isn't your fault that they've got all this work that needs to be done. So remember to stick within your what you were taught as an undergraduate. You were taught that patients' oral hygiene has to be good in order to put restorations in there. So it's about giving the ownership of the disease to the patient rather than you carrying that on your shoulders. So this is where you can see sometimes you can phase treatment 2 or 3 times depending on the activity of the patient. Claiming for treatment, it's really important, as I say, to carry out the treatment as required, and you should claim as appropriate. I talked about this just on the previous slide that don't be worried about for claiming for something you haven't done. As I said, I do a lot of medical legal work for the DDU, and I can promise you that a judge, if it ever got to that stage, would always believe the dental notes. So make sure you write good contemporaneous notes. We've all, I, as an oral surgeon, I've seen patients say to me, the last time I had a tooth out, I had a dentist's knee on my chest. And I know that's not the case, but it's amazing how patients' minds change over time, you know, their thought process and what actually happened when it didn't actually happen. But your notes are contemporaneous, they're written at that particular point and that particular moment of time. So just make sure if you're going to open course of treatment, you can do something that's, you know, a little bit out there. Make sure the reasons are in the notes why. I love it as an advisor when I get some notes and it just tells me exactly the reasons why I'm able to defend that case really well. So just justify treatments and write good contemporaneous notes. Okay, so the provision of treatment, we've talked about course of treatment. You must try and endeavour to complete treatment within a reasonable time. This is what it says in the legislation. So when you open a course of treatment, how long do you have to complete it? We'll come on to about closing the forms a bit later on, but actually within law, reasonable time usually means 6 months. But understandably, that's not always the case. You know, some patients require a bit longer than that. But if a patient was waiting, you know, over 6 months for treatment, it would be seen as unreasonable within law. So you should try and complete treatment within a reasonable time. Every patient, every course of treatment, you must have a written treatment plan, except for a band one course of treatment. So you need to provide an FP17DC, which if you're old school is the purple form, but a lot of it is online now, you know, through an iPad. But you have to provide one of these for a patient if you're doing a band two course of treatment. So as a dental therapist, if you're opening a course of treatment and doing you know, done exemption training and you have done your direct access, understandably it's your responsibility to write a written treatment plan to that patient on an FP17DC. As I say, if you're doing an exam and you do no further treatments or anything within a band one, so that may be topical fluoride, radiographs, you don't have to write a treatment plan. So for a dental therapist, it would be in that band two course of treatment. On that treatment plan, you have to explain the cost, and you have to explain which band you're going to do. You explain it's a band two course of treatment, and you have to give the patient the cost. And you have to explain if there's any alternative private work. This case by the Williams actually has just been resolved by the GDC, and they've come out and said that there's no further case to answer. The dentist was originally struck off. The dentist provided two private crowns anteriorly and charged the patient NHS cost and a top fee, and the GDC said that was out, that was unprofessional and struck the dentist off for it because saying you're mixing NHS and private work. But actually, the Supreme Court said that actually we have to give alternatives to our patients. So you are able to give alternative to private work. You can say, you know, we can give this white filling to you. You can have a silver one. You're not allowed to say that the work is poor or is unsatisfactory on NHS work, but you are able to say that the materials that you're using are of a better quality, but you can't say that it's, you know, it's, the NHS work isn't of a high standard. But yeah, you have to explain alternative private work, and the treatment plan must be signed. That may be electronically, and it may be the paper forms. You need to keep this form for 12 years. So I'm sure if you've got electronic, it's usually stored. But then after 12 years, it's supposed to be removed from the system. And I'm not sure 100% that's done. But you do have to store these. Okay, examinations. All bands require an examination. The only band that doesn't require an examination is a band urgent band, is a band 1.2 UDA. And that's because you're just doing a partial examination, you're only examining that particular area. But for band one, two, and three, you need to do a full clinical examination. And you must take appropriate radiographs as set out by FGTP guidance, which is selection for dental radiograph. And I said to you, this is one of the big things that you check in when you come into a dental practice and assessing clinical notes. When you do a record card check, you're making sure that radiographs are taking at the appropriate measures and times. If you send a band to claim off without an examination, you will not be paid for that. A lot of the systems that we use in dentistry, Software of Excellence and R4, Dentale, if you try and send a band off, band 1, 2, or 3 without an examination, it will say, you do not have an examination, you will not be paid for this treatment. Current legislation regarding the core of knowledge, as you know, if you qualified a while ago, that you may not have the core of knowledge to take radiographs. So if you haven't completed that under IRMA, then you need to have completed that before to take radiographs. But as all therapists in recent graduations have the core of knowledge, so you're able to work as operator and also assessor. So the legislation says as long as you've had the experience and training, you're able to perform this dental service.
Adrian, I've got a question for you, if that's all
Course.
right. Is it allowed to mix private NHS restorations on one treatment plan, or do all restorations must be NHS or private?
Yep, no, you can mix it on one treatment plan. On the FP17DC, there's got two sides of it. It has an NHS side, it has a private side. So if you're doing any NHS treatment, you write it on one side and any treatment for private on the other side, and you just have to explain the cost to the patients. And you don't have to give the reasons on the FP17 why you're doing a private. You just need to put that in your notes to say the reasons why you're not offering an NHS service when you're offering a private. And that may be patient requested. But yeah, you can do it on you can actually, there used to be a piece of legislation before the 2006 that you were not allowed to mix NHS and private treatment on the same tooth, but that went from 2005. So you can mix NHS and private treatment. So for example, you could do a private root canal treatment if you're a dentist on a tooth, and you could put an NHS filling on the top. You couldn't previously do that, but you can mix NHS and private treatment, no problems.
Okay, and then there's another question. They might have already answered this. Can we ask the patient to book a private hygiene during an examination?
Come on to that. I'll
Okay.
come on to that in a second. Good question.
And then final one just here at the moment. If we graduated recently, can we do the radiograph reports too, or is it just the prescribing dentist alone?
If you, it comes back to that question, doesn't it? If you're trained, confident, and competent, and indemnified to do so. So as long as your training as undergraduate told you to assess radiographs, then yes. But if not, then you need some additional training.
And it's important that you're just reporting within scope of practice, and then
Exactly. Yeah,
anything
exactly within
out of
scope.
scope of practice is then referred on. One last question, I think, on this subject. Can we mix NHS and private with regards to sedation and peds? So
No.
exam and restoration on NHS, but do sedation privately.
No, it's the only piece that, and it may come up in the lecture, but it's the only piece that's in the legislation that says you cannot mix NHS sedation or private sedation with NHS treatment. So no, you're not allowed to do that.
Okay, thank you.
A really
We
weird one for some reason.
can move on.
Okay, so continuation course of treatment. Lots of words, but let's run through this. So you can claim a continuation course of treatment. So if a patient comes, Mrs. Judds comes to see you, and you've done examination, radiographs is appropriate, you notice she's got a low left six, which is broken. So you say to Mrs. Jones, look, I've got some space now. I'm going to numb you up and I'm going to do your restoration now. So you do Mrs. Jones's treatment, no problems. And today's date, the 29th of October. So you send Mrs. Jones away. She goes and pays her a course of treatment. You give her a treatment plan, her FP17DC. She signs it downstairs and off she goes, happy with a numb lip. Mrs. Jones, unfortunately, comes back next week. And she has not, your restoration that you did in lower left six is absolutely fine, but she's now broken an upper left four. She was eating one of her grandchildren's toffees and she's broken the buccal cusp off her upper right four. So you see Mrs. Jones, you say to her, actually, I've done x-rays already. I'm going to give you a quick examination to make sure I've nothing else going on in there. And I'm going to repair that tooth for you. And you put some composite on there and off she goes very happy. So you fill out your treatment plan. She signs it downstairs. But at this time, Mrs. Jones doesn't need to pay. She doesn't need to pay for the treatment that you've done. You will still get your 3 UDAs for doing the filling, but Mrs. Jones doesn't now need to pay for that treatment for that tooth because she's in something called a continuation course of treatment. So what a continuation course of treatment is that if you need to do any additional work within 8 weeks or 2 months, you're able to open a new course of treatment. You don't open a previous course of treatment, you open a new course of treatment, you do an examination. Radiographs is appropriate if you think it's required. If she's out of her 6 months from her radiographs from her bite wings that she needs, then you would take them because that 2 weeks may put her into that. And you repair that tooth. Mrs. Jones gets that treatment for free, but you get paid for doing that. So that's a continuing course of treatment. If Mrs. Jones had come back to you and you noticed that the upper right fold was grossly carious and you missed it off the radiograph, you can open a continuing course of treatment. You have to reopen your previous course of treatment that you did and add on the restoration because she missed it. You didn't see it on the radiograph. You missed, but you didn't see that on the X-ray and you thought, I should have seen that. You need to reopen the previous course of treatment and add that on. So there's a slight difference between continuation when it's not a problem that you've missed or reopening a course of treatment if it's something you've missed. Repair or replacement. So, in yellow again, if a filling, root filling, inlay, porcelain veneer, or crown, and it's good to know the others because you may see patients who come for an emergency appointment, but if a filling of yours fails within 12 months, then you're allowed to replace that or repair it at no charge to the patient. So in this situation, Mrs. Jones came to see you on the 29th of October, 2025. She comes to see you on the 20th of October, 2026, and the filling that you did has fallen out. You're able to replace that filling for her because it's got a 12-month guarantee, and she will not be charged for it. So again, you will open a course of treatment, radiographs as appropriate, repair the restoration, and send her downstairs with her FP17DC signed, and she will not pay anything at the reception for the treatment that you've done. You will still get the UDAs for that repair and replacement. You can replace the material. If, for example, you'd put an amalgam in previously and you thought, actually, do you know what? I'm going to get better adhesion here. Probably going to put a composite in there. You are allowed to do that. The patient will still not get charged for that treatment. You cannot repair or replace if the organization, the practice you work in under that contract didn't do the original restoration. Some practices have multiple contracts at one particular practice. So it's always beneficial to know you're probably under the same one all the time, but sometimes they've got different contracts for different things. They may have a branch practice that's got a different contract number. So if Mrs. Jones came to see you at the different practice or you're working under a different contract number, you'll not get paid for it. You'll do the work. Mrs. Jones won't pay for anything at the desk because you've ticked the form, but it will come back to say that you haven't done that original restoration under that contract number. You can't repair or replace it if you said to Mrs. Jones, that lower left six, it really needs to come out, Mrs. Jones. I'm going to have to send you to the dentist. No, I just want you to put some temporary in for me. You're allowed to do that. You're allowed to say this is a temporary. I'll make good contemporaneous notes. But if Mrs. Jones comes back within the year, she will have to pay for a temporary again. It's not under the repair and replacement guarantee. If you said to the patient, I advise you to have a composite, and the patient said, no, I want an amalgam, please. I heard they're much better, they're much stronger. And you say, actually, I think the best thing here is a composite. And the patient says, no. I say they have the right to make the wrong choice. And the restoration comes out, the patient will have to pay again. And the last one here, if it reports some trauma. So if you've done an anterior composite and the patient's been drinking from a bottle or got knocked in the face and their filling comes out, unfortunately, it is not classified under the repair or replacement guarantee. So that's really good to have a good history from the patient. The reason I put this here, and it doesn't relate to dental therapy, is you hear this all the time from dentists. Bridges and dentures are not classified under the repair and replacement guarantee. So a lot of times dentists will make a denture under the repair because it's not fitted properly or they think to themselves, well, it's not quite right, so I'll make them another denture under the repair or replacement guarantee. They're doing it for free, and they're also paying for their lab bill. So it's a good thing to let people know that dentures and bridges are not under the repair or replacement guarantee.
Question for you, Adrian.
Of course.
So if a patient came in with a composite filling that is underfilled from another practice, I can't place more on top slash dress it.
Yeah, you've got to treat. I mean, if it's come from another practice, if it's nothing to, you've just got to assess that patient. You think what's the best thing to do? So, if it's if it's caries, the cavity's caries free, and you think you can just repair it, you would have to charge the patient the full cost for doing that restoration because you haven't placed it or the contract hasn't placed it.
Okay, thank you.
The caveat here, and I mentioned it, is that in both repair and replacement and continuation, so remember, repair and replacement is when the patient, you've got a 12-month guarantee, continuation with the patient comes back within 8 weeks and there's something else that the matter that you haven't missed, you still need to undertake a full clinical examination and you also need to attend, do radiographs as appropriate. It's part of that treatment plan. As I said to you can't send off a Bantu claim without an examination anyway, so you have to do a full examination. So, can a dental therapist carry out repair and replacement? Yes, but you must have undertake a clinical examination. And the legislation talks about full clinical examinations. And we'll talk in a second about that. The treatment needs to be provided under the same contract we've talked about. And that full clinical examination is the thing that gets a little bit sticky when you speak with NHS England. Remember, do not examine outside of scope. Please do not diagnose outside of scope. I know you're all very capable at diagnosing pulpitis, but if you write pulpitis in a case note, you are diagnosing outside of scope, and the GDC wouldn't like that. So even if you feel that you could write it, please do not diagnose out of scope. And I think these are the things sometimes that are a little bit out of scope: occlusion, TN, internal derangements, bridge designs, pulpal diagnosis. So, a full clinical examination, can you undertake? Yes, you can, because you can say, I've undertaken a clinical examination within scope. And if you feel there's something outside of scope of practice, remember, just refer to the dentist to be seen. Please, as I said, don't diagnose outside of scope. And that comes down to, as I said to you, good triaging, doesn't it, from receptionists, and making sure you're getting the right patients to come and see you. Okay, periodontal treatment. Going to more specific treatments now. The reason this is in here is because before 2005, the periodontal treatment was determined on the number of visits. So the more visits you had, the more you got paid as a dentist. 2005, that changed. So a band one course of treatment, if you look at the legislation, says it must have a BP of 2 and can be multiple visits. A band two course of treatment for periodontal includes surgical, non-surgical, root planing, irrigation of pockets, and subgingival curettage. To be truthful, I don't think I've ever done a supergingival curettage on any patients. Periodontal treatment always seems to go subgingival. So potentially we are not claiming for what we should be doing. It doesn't relate to the number of visits. It doesn't relate to the complexity of the whole mouth. It relates to if you've done subgingival curettage, root planing, and deep scaling. It's got nothing to do with visits. So when you're claiming for UDAs, remember in this situation, you can imagine a lot of patients will get upset with you if you say you're going to start charging a band two, but it is within the legislation, the 2005 regulations, that says band two is when you go subgingival cleaning.
Adrian, sorry, we've got a few questions just to go
That's
back
fine.
to your previous slide. Would a repair not be a 1.2 UDA band, not a band 2 with a full exam?
But it depends if you're wanting to generate more UDAs. You can do it under an urgent band if you want to do. If you do an urgent band, you don't need to do a full clinical examination. You don't need to do radiographs, but you're doing a 1.2 UDA. So you're doing the restoration. What I would do, what I have done in my time, is if a patient came in for that type of work, I'd probably numb the patient up and do their examination while they're going numb. in order to claim a 3 UDA rather than 1.2 UDA.
Okay, thank you. And there's a few more questions here.
Of course.
I knew we were going to get a few at this point when you mentioned pulpal
Perio.
diagnosis and
Oh, yeah,
things.
okay.
So could we not say that the patient's symptoms and sensibility testing would be indicative of reversible slash irreversible pulpitis in the notes?
You're diagnosing outside of scope. So, no, you should be saying unable to formulate full treatment plan or diagnosis, referred to dentist.
Okay. Are we okay to give a differential diagnosis before referring to GDP for out with our scope? These are all quite similar questions.
I think it's a conversation, isn't it, to have with your own dentist that you know we work with in the practice. But remember, as soon as you write pulpitis into a note, you are diagnosing pulpitis, and that's outside of scope. So I'd have a conversation with your own dentist and say, look, this is what I'm going to write in the notes, and this is what it means, but I'm not allowed to write pulpitis.
Hypothetically, a patient had facial swelling and dental therapist saw for 1.2 urgent. We will be able to take a PA of the tooth with swelling but not diagnose the apical pathology seen. Or do we just refer the dentist post radiograph?
You can, but you can say there's an apical radiolucency, that you're not diagnosing there. You're just giving an opinion on a radiograph. As long as you're trained, confident, and competent to do so, you're not giving a diagnosis. You're just saying what you're seeing from the radiograph, and that would give an indication, wouldn't it, to the dentist who's going to see the patient. If a patient's
Yeah.
got facial swelling, though, I think they probably need to see the dentist urgently.
Absolutely. I think that's what I was going to say, that actually this is where the triage comes in, and actually, is it appropriate to see a therapist at that point anyway?
Definitely not.
Can we not diagnose occlusion?
Well, the occlusion, that there's a little bit of, isn't there, with the, oh, I know you've got a lecture coming up about orthodontics, so I'm probably going to dial into that one myself, Joanne, because it's a very fine line between the orthodontic diagnosis. Can an orthodontist another letter came out from the GD from Jason talking about that dental therapists should be able to refer to anyone. We know that sometimes that orthodontists do reject dental therapists from a point of view. In the legislation, it's really unclear. So I'd be really interested in your next speaker that you've got coming up soon, Joanne, to ask her about the orthodontist, see what she thinks.
Yeah, okay. Jumping to perio here. If a patient must attend every 3 months for perio treatment, is this charged Bantu once for the year?
It depends what you write in your notes. It depends what you write in your treatment plan. If you write in your treatment plan, patient review 3 months requires, root planing or PMPR, then that's part of the same treatment plan. So you have to be careful what you write in your treatment plan. So you could say review patient in 3 months and say nothing else, and then you're making a new treatment plan when you're seeing the patient in 3 months. But if you write review patient for 3 months for PMPR, for the next year, then that's a treatment plan for a year. So you have to be careful with what you write in your clinical notes.
Okay, and then just going back to the pulpitis, but reversible pulpitis is in our scope, isn't it? And again, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because it's a bit of a grey area, because
If
if
it's
it's
primary
reversible, we should
teeth,
be managing it.
if it's primary teeth, it is within scope, isn't it? You are within scope, aren't you, for, but actually, pulpal diagnosis is outside of scope for dental therapy.
Yeah, I think
Don't
this
make
is a
the rules.
conversations for
I
another
think.
day. We could be here all night.
Do I think you can do it? Of course I do. Do I have any inclination or worries that you can diagnose irreversible pulpitis? Yeah, exactly. I don't think there is any issue with that. You're just as trained, at a level that I am, but just unfortunately, pulpal diagnoses are outside of scope.
Okay, we'll park that one for now, I think. Can we write carious lesion involving the pulp? Advise patients to see dentist for further assessment.
Yep, that
May need
sounds fine.
us that sounds yeah may need RCT or XLA. That's fine. And then last question before we allow you to carry on. If I see a patient for periodontal treatment to suspect an endoperio lesion following negative sensibility testing and isolated deep pocketing, Am I right in understanding I'm no longer able to write this before referring back to GDP for confirmation?
Well, it's not a pulpal diagnosis, a perioendo, isn't it? You could find a periendo lesion because a periodontal has caused the endodontic lesion. You're not saying there's a pulp, you're just saying that there's potentially a periodontal problem that's causing an endodontic issue. And I just come back to just try and think about the words that they use. Try not to avoid the word pulpitis because pulpal diagnosis is not allowed within scope. But I think, a periendo lesion is fine because it's a periodontal problem that's causing an endodontic lesion.
And we've got another question related to ortho. So I'm going to say, actually, I think you're probably best to save that question for the next webinar. So, Adrian, I'll let you carry on.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Always lots of questions when you get to these
Thank you.
points,
Thank
Joanne.
you.
Always. Okay, so fissure sealants, we talked about, didn't we, that fissure sealants are all going to become banned too from April 2026, but currently they're not, so please don't claim if it isn't. A current fissure sealant is when you don't pick up your handpiece and you get no fissure caries and you just want to seal the tooth and you're putting a sealant restoration on. It's a band one claim. If you pick up your high speed or slow speed and need to remove tooth because there's caries and you put a fissure sealant over the top, so you put glass enamel composite and then your fissure sealant over the top, you'll be that's a band two claim currently until April 2026. If you do a band two claim, remember you're expected to do examination and radiographs as appropriate. And up to 2026, currently, as you would have seen that about the fluoride, but currently you can do a band one claim 4 times a year to put fluoride varnish on. So remember, a band one, two, and three claim currently require an examination. So you can't currently send a patient to a dental nurse to put fluoride on at 3 months unless they've had an examination. So that was a big wide open market for dental therapy when direct access allowed you to see patients, because previously if a patient required fluoride they'd have to see the dentist, but now currently they can see you. But under the current legislation until 2026 they still require an examination for every fluoride application. That isn't the case in Wales. You can see a patient and see a dental nurse to put fluoride on in between without seeing the dentist. But currently, until 2026, you can't do that. Nice guidelines. We're heading towards the end now because I know sorry, it's always takes a bit longer than an hour. This sorry. You expect to see patients between 3 months and 2 years, depending on the oralness assessment. So you're supposed to risk assess their need to see how often you should be seeing patients. It's not see patients every 6 months. It's not that idea. You should be seeing patients on their risk need. So some patients, if you've got a virgin mouth with no problems, you could probably see it 18 months. You don't need to see them every 6 months. And the recall, as I said to you, should be written on the FP17DC. Okay, incomplete treatments. Sometimes patients don't come back for treatment. And what can you do about it? Can you close the form? Yes, you can. You must at least try to contact the patient. It actually says in the legislation by phone or by letter, but I think text message would be absolutely fine, just to say that you've tried to contact them, to say, look, you haven't turned back up for your treatment. You're supposed to give them about 6 to 8 weeks in order for them to contact you. And the 8 weeks is important, and we'll come onto that in a second. So, for example, if a patient came for two restorations in return for our outstanding ones, you can claim an incomplete treatment. You tick the form off, you say the patient did not come back, we've tried to contact them, we've given them 6 weeks to try and contact us, and I want to claim for the work I've done already, and you're allowed to do that. It's really important that you look at your open courses of treatment to make sure that patients have got further appointments to come back to see you, because if you don't claim for the treatment within 8 weeks, you will lose the UDAs that you've done. So, as I say, all treatments must be completed that you submit within 2 months. So, if you see a patient, Mrs. Jones, she came to see you, did that lower left 6 and you did that upper right 4, and then someone came through the door and was talking to you, and you didn't send that course of treatment off, you have 8 weeks from the date you finished her treatment to send that claim off. If you send that claim form off after 8 weeks, you will not get paid for that treatment. So it's really important, as I said to you, that if patients are not coming back for treatment, if they've failed their appointment and they don't have any further appointment, that you need to check on a regular basis on your notes that your open course of treatment are being closed. And it's very common in practice that practice managers would do this. But you need to check with your practice manager. You need to show that the work that you're doing has been claimed. If the patient comes back and says, "Oh, Mrs. Jones came back, 3 months later and said, oh, I was supposed to make an appointment, and there was an outstanding work that needs to be done," you do not reopen the last course of treatment. You open a new course of treatment, and unfortunately, Mrs. Jones will need to pay again because you have closed that form off because she's failed to attend. Of
Question for you, Adrian.
course.
If a patient has a treatment plan, say for fillings, and fails to attend their appointments 3 times, and the plan's still open for up to 2 months, then books for the fillings in the 3rd month, do we continue with the treatment plan or do we close? You might have just answered that, actually.
Yep, that's
We
right.
close it. Yeah.
It's preempted me. That's
Thank
well, good
you.
question. Well done. Okay, so can the dental therapist or hygienist close a course of treatment? Yes, as long as the clinical examination has been done, as long as everything's within your scope of practice on that course of treatment. Please do not close a course of treatment that's got a denture or a crown on it. It's not within scope. It will be bounced back. You cannot close a course of treatment that is not within your scope of practice. And if it's not within your scope, remember to refer on for dentist assessment or examination. And again, I mention it here. It's something that you need to have a really big discussion about. If you're doing certain work and they're doing certain work, how is that new, how's that course of treatment going to be split? How's the fees going to be split? And that is definitely from April 2026 when these new fees come in. There's a discussion on how that work and that fee is going to be split. Busy slide, but I don't want to go through it all. But these are the type of things that an ICB, a dental practice advisor, would be looking at, which is the type of information I get about each individual who works in a practice, including dental therapists. So, for example, I'm looking at the percentage of continuation courses. Are you opening a lot of continuation courses? Does that mean that you're missing things? Are you not taking radiographs as appropriate? Are you doing a lot of band one urgent courses? Why does a patient keep coming back and back and back for urgent courses? Are you not doing a full course of treatment on them? So, as working an opening course of treatment as a dental therapist, you now are assessed on these type of KPIs to ensure that contracts are fulfilled and money is being used value for money. There's also, I don't know if you know, that you also get a percentage of patients that are written to see are they satisfied with the dentistry provided and how long they had to wait. It's quite common that patients will get a letter or a link in order to give information about you back. And that's something as a dental practice advisor we also get to see. Talked a little bit about this. You are allowed to mix private work, as I said, but you're not allowed to mix NHS work, private sedation, or GA. And I mentioned GA because some of our overseas colleagues do GA, but you're not allowed to do GA in primary care at all in the United Kingdom. But you're not allowed to mix NHS or private sedation. It's a really weird thing within the legislation that was maintained. Infection control, what does it say in the 2005 regulations? It says you must undertake infection control and decontamination. Of course, we would do that under HTML 105. So that's in the legislation. General anaesthetic, you're not allowed to take under provision of a general anaesthetic, but as I said to you, watch this space for 2027. Prescriptions, you're not currently allowed to write an NHS or private prescription for prescription-only medicine. Remember, exemptions is not prescribing. You're not allowed to prescribe on an NHS prescription form. There's a little bit of work that needs to be done with exemptions about charging patients, but I'm sure that's all in hand. But you can't write prescriptions. Comes back to one of the first slides. You must undertake all treatment with reasonable care and skill. That's what it says in the legislation. Patients' records, you must keep full, contemporaneous, accurate, and contemporaneous notes. And you must keep the clinical notes for the required amount of time. Financial as you was 12 years, patients' record is 20 years. Patient records include treatment plans, radiographs, photographs, study casts, any laboratory tickets, but as you said, not applicable for dental therapists. But just keep everything. Any information about that patient is part of their medical records. And remember, don't write things in notes about patients. If you have a subject access request under GDPR, they get to know everything that's ever been written about them. So please don't write their names. Don't inference somebody, Mrs. Jones with the red hair, because if she's the only one that comes to practice with red hair, they know it's Mrs. Jones, and she'll also get that information as well. If you send information via your WhatsApp about patients, that is also open to a subject access request, and you'll have to hand your mobile phone over, and they'll have to go through every message on your phone. So please, if you are going to talk about patients, make it just very professional and ethical, and please don't write it in the notes. I'm constantly telling patients, sorry, people in my organization, stop sending me an email about people with their name in them. Referrals, you can make appropriate referrals where required. Can a dental therapist refer to a maxillofacial department for, 2 week rule? Of course you can. There's no reason why that can't happen. Why allow that patient to wait over the weekend when you could send that referral off? So you make appropriate referrals efficiently and effectively. And then the last slide, I think, is complaints. Do you have to deal with, as it say in the legislation? Yes, you have to deal with complaints effectively and efficiently. Let's say you should look at the practice complaint policy, and you have to now cooperate as a performer or a person that opens course of treatments and able to send claims off with any investigation with the ICB, CQC, or NHS England. It's in legislation. So you can't say, I don't want to engage, because it's part of your contract. Here are the references, and they'll be on the end of the slide, so you'll be able to click on them, and that gives you a new guidance regarding the new scope of practice, and it also gives you about the new dental charges and what's happening from 2026. And that's it. And then you're probably all bored to death. I'll try and stop sharing if
Thank
I
you,
can.
Adrian. So much information.
Ah, stop sharing. Oh no.
There are some more questions. So I will
I'm trying to stop sharing.
put those to you.
There we are. There we are.
Okay, right. A bit of confusion about band 1.2 or band 2.
Okay.
Don't want to do the wrong thing. So if a patient attends with a lost filling and I put a permanent filling in, can I claim a band 1.2 by not doing an exam, but I could also do a band 2 if I want to do a full exam?
Perfect. That's exactly it.
Okay.
You don't have to do a full clinical examination on a patient for an urgent. You're just dealing with that urgent issue that the patient's coming with. And that might be a fractured filling, it may be a toothache, it may be, a lost crown. So from that point of view, you're just dealing with that specifics. If you're wanting, you've got time to do an examination, you're increasing your turnover, you're generating more money by doing a band two and claiming 3 UDAs. So you're getting £28, you're getting about 20, £32 compared to you getting nearly £80.
How is the quality of treatment measured? So, for example, are restorations inspected?
Really good question. So before 2006, dental practice advisors used to also be reference officers. So what would happen is they would write to, on average, about three patients every quarter to your patient selection and pull them in to see the work that you've been done. There is no quality assurance now of any restoration undertaken on the NHS. It was pulled from dental practice advisors' remit. Quality, the only person that sees quality, and I remind you, and probably you'd say this when you're teaching Duran, is that the only person that sees the quality is you, and therefore you have to determine if that is of good quality, and are you happy for another professional to see that. Have I done a restoration before and said to the patient at the end of it, I don't like the look of it, or I've fitted a crown? Yes, I have, and said to them, look, I need to redo that for you. It's a really good stopgap to think to yourself, if somebody else saw this work, would they be happy with it? But there is no quality assurance now on the NHS.
Okay. A question that's cropped up a couple of times, actually, I'm not sure whether, don't think you've answered it. Can we ask a patient to book a private hygiene during the exam?
Ah, I was going to come on to that. Yeah, that's really good. So you are When you undertake periodontal treatment, the patient has the right to have their periodontal treatment under the NHS if it's started on the NHS. You can't say to a patient, as I said to you before, that NHS treatment is inadequate or of a lower standard. You can't say to a, it's bad treatment having the NHS. You need to see somebody private. As you will know, BSP guidance, if it says that you need to see a hygienist or a dentist or a dental therapist for your periodontal treatment, you are not allowed to say you can't have it on the NHS. You have to offer the treatment to an NHS patient with NHS treatment.
Thank you. Are you allowed to write in the patient's are you allowed to write their occupation, sorry, in the notes?
Yeah, I mean, if you've asked the patient and they've willingly gave you that, there's no issue from that point of view.
Are there any courses for dental therapists for deciduous XLA, just to keep our skills competency levels up, as it's as in it's easy to lose confidence and to lose those skills.
100%, and that's what I hear all the time from dental therapists I work with, is to say that they don't feel 100% confident about they've got the skill, but if you don't utilize the skill all the time, then potentially you lose it. So that's why there's this little piece of work going on. Watch this space. I'm developing a course, so I'm lucky because I have 57 clinics up around down the country with the community dental services. So we do GA. So yeah, I've got access to GA to allow that. So, and I'm sure your dental hospitals will have that access as well. So I'm sure that these will start to be developed. I just want to ensure that the guidance out there is going to be safe for dental therapists. What I don't want to do is have this piece changed by the GDC, and then dental therapists just get thrown in to do it on their own because that's not appropriate. We need to have that training pathway and that guidance behind to allow safe, effective treatment from dental therapists who are quite adequate to do the perfectly to do this type of work. But we just need to ensure that the safety cushion around it is there.
I think from a courses perspective, it's probably worth looking for your so on max courses and just see if there's any courses in your area as well. Sometimes there can be some courses there for primary extractions and things. So just have a look out. Sorry to ask you, but are we allowed to give LA if patient request during a perio scale? And is it mandatory to write the batch number?
Okay, so as long as it's within scope, if you feel it's happy to give local anaesthetic, as long as you've had that training to do that, there's no issue from that point of view. If it's making the patient and they're requesting it, of course, yeah, you should go and make them comfortable. So I'm doing a little bit of work with the Department of Health about note taking because, as we well know, note taking is currently takes majority of our time up, and we actually write so much more than any other profession. If you look at somebody who's had their hip replacement, you look at their notes in theatre, that it's usually a paragraph, and we would write pages and pages for seeing a patient for a checkup. Currently, the guidance says you should write batch numbers, but as again, watch this space. I think that is going to be something that we need to probably remove. It's superfluous. We don't have patients with allergies all the time about from inadequate local anaesthetics or batches that are actually ill prepared. So I watch this space. Currently, yes, write the batch numbers, but I watch it.
Okay. Fiona has very timely added a max course link there. I haven't clicked on it, but I presume it's for primary extractions. I know I've seen one previously, so just have a little look at that, worth having a look at. I'm working in special care within a trust, and I would love to apply direct access to my trust. Have you any experience of implementing this within a trust, and is there any advice for me to help convince higher management beyond my line manager?
I currently don't work in a trust. I work in a CIC, so actually, from a point of view, it's much easier to implement. I think you've just got to show, think you, the cost analysis from a point of view, and it's difficult if you've never written business cases before. But I'm sure there's people out here and people on this call, probably even BADT, would be able to help you develop some type of business case that says, look, it's much more cost effective to use as a direct access than it is to see a dentist. It works out that that dental therapists, if they're seeing the right patients with the right support around them, with the structures in place, it's much more cost effective, and patients love it. The evidence in the literature is that Patients love seeing DCPs for treatment. They're usually much better than dentists.
Thank you. The member that's asked that question there, please get in touch if you want to have a chat about anything. We could probably give you some further guidance on that. So just send an email through to admin@badt.org.uk. Is there going to be a postgraduate course for dental therapists to progress further in paediatric dentistry?
So currently, I don't know what you do, John, but currently my organisation, I send my therapists off on to do a diploma in special care. So I've got a couple of therapists now who've done diplomas in special care dentistry. So and that's a way to progress. The difficulty, I think, in trusts or is finding the funding for it. But a lot of my therapists have gone on to special care paediatrics.
Yeah, and there was the paediatric course that was run by the Royal College. I can't remember if that's been paused or whether it's up and running again yet. But again, please email us and we can give you some further guidance on that. Just haven't always got this
Laura
information.
says the Royal College one's got to stop now.
Okay. Thank you. I
But
know
there
there
are
was some talk
universities
of
out
it
that you can do a
starting as
diploma
well with
through.
some domain.
There's lots of universities that you can do a diploma through, and they're accepting dental therapists. As I say, I've had two in my organisation that have gone off and done a diploma in dental therapy, dental special care, sorry.
Okay, can we give the option for a patient for NHS perio slash private hygiene?
It comes back to that if a patient requires the treatment on the NHS and they're an NHS patient and they've signed an NHS form to say they're having NHS treatment, you have to offer the treatment on the NHS. You cannot say to that patient, you cannot have this on the NHS, because it comes back to that third or fourth slide, that mandatory treatments. Mandatory treatments is all aspects of dentistry, including periodontal treatment. So you cannot say to a patient, you can't have it on the NHS. So to say to a patient, you can only have your perio treatment privately, is ill-informed, and the patient does have the ability for litigation.
I think this is probably worth clarifying. If a patient comes with high caries risk, and you do three fillings in one course of treatment, can I ask the patient to come back in 3 months for another exam and the remaining fillings?
Not if you've noticed, if you've seen them all during the first examination, you need to complete them all within that one course of treatment. That's splitting a course of treatment. That isn't phasing treatment.
Okay. Thank you, Verity. She's helped me out answering some questions here. Here's one. Is it okay to close a course of treatments with prescriptions? For example, we did an exam slash urgent treatment, the dentist had a look and prescribed antibiotics.
So no, that would need to be closed by, if a prescription charge has been put on a prescription code, it would need to be closed by a dentist.
Thank you. And that. Hang on, another one, I think. To start doing direct access under an NHS contract, do dental therapists just need their personal ID plus PIN number?
Yep, and also the proof that you've done your direct access and if required, exemption training, if that's what the plan is to do local anaesthetic.
Okay. Perfect, thank you. Are there any more questions? That brings us nicely to 8:30.
I told you it would take an hour and a half to run, sorry.
No,
There's always loads of
it's fine.
questions.
I think it's good that we planned it that way so that we could make sure that there were lots of time for questions. Can dental therapists do mouth guard with dentist prescription?
Yeah, it can do the impression, but you can't close that course off because it would be a band three.
Can we close a course of treatment of a dentist after? Can we close a course of treatment of a dentist after completing treatment?
Only if it's within your scope. So if the dentist has done the examination and referred to you for the restorations, yes, you can close. But if you had a denture or a bridge or a crown on there, you can't close, or any prescription, you can't close that course of treatment.
Lots of thank yous.
You're welcome. I'm sorry it's been really like a long night. Sorry, an hour and a half of
There's a,
rules and regs.
yeah, one more question and then we'll put an end to that. But any more questions, please do get in touch, and we can feedback any information with you. I had a pregnant lady who needed perio and 4 to 5 restorations. However, she refused radiographs until after baby's birth. In this case, was I okay to do the perio, close the treatment, and bring the patient back after the baby's birth to do rads and restorations?
Yeah, I mean, from a point of view, the patient has had the option. You could say to the patient, "I can't do your restorations without seeing radiographs," and you don't want to have them done, even though you might think it's really low risk. She has the right to say no. She has the right to the wrong treatment, in your opinion. So you did what you needed to do. Yeah, close that course of treatment off and bring the patient back when you can do a full examination.
Right. Put the message in the chat there. Really, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Right, before everybody leaves, I just want to say huge thank you again, Adrian, for your time this evening. And I'm just going to do a quick promo for our next webinars. I can just find the share button. There we go. That should be sharing. Is that right, Adrian? Can you
It
see?
is sharing, yep.
Perfect. So we've got two webinars coming up as part of this autumn series. So Dr. Helen Stevenson will be presenting on Wednesday, the 12th of November, 7 o'clock for an hour, including question time about the developing dentition, orthodontic assessment, and guidance on orthodontic referrals. And then 2 weeks later, we've got Emily Banks, who will be talking about delivering care for neurodivergent patients. And again, another hour. That's the 26th of November at 7 o'clock. We've just so that everybody knows, we've picked the themes for our webinars and the topics based off feedback that we've received from people at previous webinars. So we do listen to your feedback and take on board requests. So when you fill out your evaluations that will come to you, please put any further requests and we can look at those for the future. So with that, let me just check. There's nothing more. Lots of thank yous, Adrian. So thank you very much on behalf of BADT and all our members.
You're welcome.
Have a nice evening, everybody. Your evaluations will come to you in due course, so please be patient. And then following that, your CPD certificates will come to you. If you have any issues and have any problems, please just contact admin@badt.org.uk. Have a nice evening, everybody. Stop the recording.